Hi, this is Joe Francica, Editor-in-Chief of Directions Magazine. The following is a recording of a press briefing delivered at the GEOINN Symposium 2011, given by the Director of the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, Letitia Long. It was recorded on October 17, 2011, in San Antonio, Texas.
Thank you all for being here. I just thought I'd spend a couple minutes maybe amplifying or re-emphasizing a few points I just made.
Great.
And then open the floor for questions. Last year I announced a vision to put the power of GEOINN in the hands of the users. One thing I didn't say while I was standing up there, I just, you know, it was kind of a given that in addition to all of the great work that we've had underway over the last year in implementing the vision, we've been doing our day jobs. So there's a lot going on in the world every single day, and GEOINT has been right there. So in addition to the Osama bin Laden operation, which you certainly have heard plenty about, Director Clapper referenced the number of other operations that have taken place over the past year where GEOINT was really at the heart of things. Likewise, our support to the humanitarian assistance disaster recovery arena. I mean, think of the natural disasters that we've had over the last year, the tornadoes in the Midwest, all of the flooding in the Midwest, the wildfires, California, Texas, Oklahoma, as well as hurricane season. You know, so we are not just responding to those, we are trying to anticipate. We are always working with FEMA in that arena. And then, of course, support to military operations. You know, we've got a number of folks still in Iraq. Our numbers are actually growing still in Afghanistan. As well, we have folks deployed elsewhere around the world in support of our military forces. So our up-tempo is extremely high to begin with. And at the same time, I'm asking the workforce, I'm asking the whole GEOINT enterprise to innovate, to modernize, to take GEOINT to the next level. And I think that I demonstrated in there, I think I actually showed you, that we've been pretty busy this past year. We have delivered concrete applications, not only to FEMA, but some of our other customers within the Department of Homeland Security, to our military forces. And so, as I said, we've been busy and we've been very successful. And so what I really wanted to do here is just emphasize that to, again, say we've been doing our day jobs while we've been innovating. We have been creating, well, I'll say creating new value. We've been creating new value from the standpoint of the applications that we've delivered are going to save us time and money. They're going to save our mission partners time and money. And again, it's freeing up our analysts to work on the harder issues, the enigmas that are out there. And we're going to continue on this path. We have irreversible momentum. We are going in the right direction. We are getting tremendously positive feedback from all of our users out there. And basically what they're saying is, can you do more and can you do it faster? So that's what we're going to continue to do over this next year. The other thing I guess I'd like to amplify, and I mentioned this a bit in my remarks, is our new headquarters, NGA Campus East, at Fort Belvoir North in Springfield, Virginia. We have consolidated our East Coast workforce in one location, and it is purpose-built for our business. We have the luxury of being able to modernize our infrastructure, virtualize a lot of the applications that our analysts use to, again, make them more efficient. When it used to take hours to days to pull archived imagery, we can now do that in minutes to hours. Huge improvement. In fact, some of our analysts will tell you they didn't even bother to order archived imagery sometimes because it would just take too long and it would be past the point of being useful because they needed to get a product out. Archived imagery is pretty important though if you want to show the before and after, what happened before, what's going on now. The facility also was designed and built with collaboration in mind, and we are already realizing the benefits of that. Just having our workforce co-located, not to spend the time driving across town to get to a meeting. Yes, we use video teleconferencing. Yes, of course, email, phone, and collaborative software. But sometimes there's no replacement for a face-to-face meeting. And now it's as easy as, walking down a flight of stairs or walking down the hall. And we have our folks who are doing the R&D sitting with our analysts. We have our collection managers sitting with our analysts. And the way that we were organized, we actually had all our R&D and acquisition folks out in one location, and we had analysts in two different locations, and we had our collection managers in a totally different location. So just those physical boundaries sometimes precluded collaboration. Now having everyone in one place, the level of energy is noticeably different when you walk through the halls. I mean, some folks say, we're standing taller. If you've been to the facility, you certainly know it's pretty inspiring as you just walk into the door. So let me just stop with that and open up for questions.
Hi, Ben Iannotta from the C4I SR Journal. Are the apps operational yet, fully in use? I know you talked a little about the FEMA example, but how many are in use and how many are still in beta or whatever you call it?
So they're actually both at the same time. I mentioned that we were in development with about a half dozen apps when Hurricane Irene was bearing down on the East Coast, and so we felt confident enough that we could go ahead and deploy with them. But we were still ringing them out. We were still, kind of doing, beta testing, if you will. But when we're talking about apps, we're talking about a much shorter development cycle and a much shorter testing cycle than we would with, what we think of as systems with full applications on them. So we were comfortable going to the field with something that, FEMA certainly hadn't had the opportunity to fully test out from their perspective. We even developed a couple of applications while we were deployed with them because we could, as we were working with them, realize that they needed something additional. So that whole, being able to input data from the field and immediately have that available across the network, we did that on the fly. It took us less than 2 days to code that in. And, we did a little testing before we turned it over to the search and rescue teams. So we're testing and using them in the field at the same time. Now, a little bit different would be the electronic knee pad application that I developed today, or that I demoed today. We're going to do formal beta testing on that with, as I mentioned, we actually start today with Air Mobility Command. It's a little bit different when you're flying an airplane than when you are, trying to maybe locate a bridge that's washed out. You're flying an airplane, you want to make sure that everything really is working. So we've got a very, very formal beta test program there where they're still going to be flying with the paper products along with the electronic knee pad. And again, we've set up a very rigid, first there'll be a lot of, think of flight simulator training. There'll be a lot of on-the-ground testing before we actually, take those in flight and start testing them in flight. So very spiral development, get it out in the field as quickly as we can. And many of these apps, they don't take very long to write. They don't take very long to test. So we're just going to keep rolling them out as quickly as we can.
Now, have you developed any in the field for military guys after getting a request saying, hey, here's something we could use, like you did with FEMA?
We actually have. So a couple that we've done with the military, we have the ability for them to order, and then we can stream video to mobile devices, unclassified. Same with commercial imagery, so again, unclassified. The helicopter landing zone, we've actually done about three instantiations of that. And so there is an app that they ask for and that they can use from handheld mobile devices to you know, simply identify a helicopter landing zone depending upon the aircraft type and what they need to do, what they're carrying, etc. The reason it's unclassified as opposed to one that might be unclassified is the data that it operates on. So one of the things that we clearly want to do is make these applications data agnostic or data neutral so that they can operate on any of our data sets there. As long as the data is, as I said, discoverable, accessible, and usable, it's metadata tagged, we understand what it is, the application, you know, you just web service enable it, and away you go. So some of our data sets are unclassified. They've been able to use that helicopter landing zone for that, as well a number of other apps, which actually the apps themselves are classified, so I can't get into those here. But we've probably got actually a little more than a half a dozen from, you know, a military support standpoint that we have developed. Some we've just done, some have been at their request and are out there.
Can you tell us overall how many apps are either in development or close to being finished?
In development, okay, so we have something called the gas station. And that's where we are, quote, registering our apps. We've got upwards of 100 in there. Now, some of those are for use by our own analysts. Some of those are, you know, really in the early stages of R&D. But, you know, as I said in part of my closing remarks, I'm sure we cannot imagine today the apps that we will be delivering tomorrow and the value that we'll be delivering tomorrow. I mean, it's just like the iPhone. I mean, somebody's coming up with a new app every single day. You know, oh, if only I could, and then away they go and they code it. And again, as long as the data is available, you know, there's so many different things you could be doing.
So given the extensive...
Colin Clark, we have all the time.
Good to see you.
Joe Francis, the Directions Magazine. So given the mission that you just explained at the very beginning, the extensive strain that you're under, what part of that mission is at risk given the budget cuts?
Part of the mission that is at risk given the budget cuts. I don't believe that any part of our mission is at risk. And I did make an assumption that you all know NGA and you know what our mission set is. It's not the mission set that's at risk, it's perhaps some of the capabilities that we use to fulfill the mission. And what I'm trying to achieve within NGA is making our contribution to the deficit reduction through efficiency. I mean, just a few examples I gave today, we are going to save hundreds of man hours and hundreds of thousands of dollars, millions of dollars, actually, when you think about, and I just gave that one example of flight information procedures, $20 million in 1 year to print pubs that we ship all over the world every 28 days for every air crew that's out there. I can update the data once, send it out, and it's available to all, and it's the most up-to-date. And something I didn't talk about, we're partnering with FAA. So we're not developing all the apps. They're doing the same for civil aviation. So we have partnered with them, and we're splitting the workload. We're doing some of the apps, they're doing some of the apps. We're working with NOAA, with NR, with the Navy, with the Air Force, to incorporate other sources of data. So weather data, you kind of would like that as you're flying. imagery, you know, imagery to the cockpit. I mean, we do that already, but getting that all in one place. So we're doing a lot of partnering, not only with government entities, obviously, but also with industry partners. So my goal is that we're certainly not going to cut back on mission, but a change in the way we achieve the mission fulfillment is where I'm driving to. And you heard Director Clapper talk about the IT efficiencies writ large. We're pretty inefficient right now in the way we do our business from an information technology perspective. And that's why you heard about the Quad. I can, you know, elaborate on that a little bit. The directors of NSA, NGA, CIA, and NRO 4 years ago got together and said, we got to do this in a more efficient way. Why are we all architecting our own networks? Why are we all have our own network operating centers? We're doing all of the same business applications. So why don't we work on, you know, common mission services? And NSA, you do this, and DIA, you do this, and NRO, you do that, and NGA, you do that. We did that on our own. This was before we were talking about deficit reductions and, you know, our downturn in our top line. We're now morphing the Quad to the Quint. CIA is joining the ranks because it's good business. It makes sense. And we're already seeing return on investment there. I don't do any provisioning of desktop video teleconferencing anymore. DIA does it all for me. And pretty soon, you know, you heard General Alexander talk about going down to two network operating centers. I'd like to see us at two for the whole community. We'll get there. If there is a silver lining to a reduced top line, it's that we are going to be more efficient. We are going to get a better return on our taxpayers' dollars. Yes, ma'am.
I'm Myrna James Yu with Imaging Notes Magazine. Dovetailing on that conversation about the cost cutting, could you address the NGA direction toward open source software?
The direction towards open source software, and software in particular, as opposed to just open source information.
Yes.
Because I was going to say, open source information, huge.
Yeah.
The more we can obtain, the better we are. I mean, I say, you know, data is good, more data is better, so I'll take it from any sector I can get it. Open source software, again, you know, if it's out there and it's proven, we ought to be using it. You heard General Alexander talk about, you know, the cloud they developed. They put it out there in the open sector because there are great minds everywhere. They will iterate it. They will add, you know, better parts to it. They will add things that we haven't thought of. Now, as with anything you get from an open source, you've got to check it and double check it and triple check it. I mean, one of the questions I got was, you know, how do you assure if others are contributing the efficacy of that data? You've got to do those checks. The strong auditing controls on who touched a piece of information last, that along with, you know, you may have gold copies of something, you may have silver copies of something, you may have platinum copies of something else. And the same can be applied to open source software. You know, you want to take a hard look at what you're going to be using it for. But I'll take it from anywhere.
Thanks, Donnelly from Geospatial Intelligence Forum. A lot of the exhibitors on the show floor have been working on stuff in the last year that they're showing. I don't know if you want to discuss specific examples, but in general, do you think they're on the right track? How is the industry doing in their share of meeting your vision?
Industry is a tremendous partner, and I think they're doing an outstanding job. I certainly don't know everything that's out on the floor. I'm going to do my best to get to as many booths as possible in these today and the next 2 days. But, again, great ideas come from all sectors, and our industry partners are key to us implementing our vision. We'll put out a request for ideas, and we'll get more than we could ever imagine. We get a lot of unsolicited proposals. We look at them all. Nobody has a corner on the market on good ideas, and so they do come from all places, and I do want to take advantage of them. We have very strong relationships with our industry partners. They understand our mission set. They understand our priorities. I have worked very hard to foster an open relationship so that they do understand our priorities. They do understand how we operate. They do understand our challenges, and they are bringing a wide range of solutions for us. So I give them a very high mark, and I'm looking forward to seeing what they have to offer as I spend hours on the floor in each of the next days.
Can you give us a crib sheet at the end so we can pick off the ones that we're paying attention to? This may go too far, but I've just been thinking about this the last couple hours. As we migrate all of this to cloud computing, is the IC and DoD effectively creating sort of a parallel closed internet?
Okay, so I'm not the expert here, but the first thing, no. We still ride on, much of the public infrastructure, that the internet is out there on. Now, is it, there's separate security enclaves, so I don't know that I'd refer to it as a separate internet, although I suppose you could refer to our networks today as separate internets, because I guess maybe that's kind of what they are. But again, we are trying to capitalize on what industry has already done and then adapt that for our purposes. Add that security layer that General Alexander was talking about. Really focus on the perimeter defense. You can never build the walls high enough, so it's really focusing on the perimeter defense. I guess I never thought about it that way, but I guess you could say that the current classified networks that we have are parallel universes to the internet, in which case it's a continuation of that. But we're using
this one will go across the IC and DoD.
But we're using the same technology, the same cloud computing technology that anyone else is using. In fact, industry is building it for us. The security layer that NSA provides that we will overlay on that to protect our classified information.
In the same vein, can you explain what you mean by cloud computing, like from a human level, like how an analyst would be able to do his or her job? And to what degree is that already implemented at NGA?
So, in fact, I'll just add on to something that General Alexander said, because for our analysts, it's the same challenge for his analysts. We have, I don't know how many databases, a whole lot of databases out there. And today, the analyst needs to know where that data is to go find it. Sometimes you can do a general query and it'll go out across several databases. It certainly doesn't go out across all of them. And the query tools don't work across all of the databases. And you have to authenticate your identity with each of those. That's a separate password. That's a separate search. So our analysts spend on order of, again, I like to do these informal surveys, so this isn't, exact, but I've asked enough analysts now. They spend between two-thirds and three-quarters of their day looking for data. I mean, they're only spending between a quarter and a third of their day analyzing and getting any value added. Cloud computing is going to give us the ability to store the data in the cloud in such a way, one authentication, so, one password, one query, will go out across all of the information and bring that back. So the analyst is huge. It's going to be a great time saver. And as we all implement it, from a GEOINT perspective, then it makes it very easy for us to geospatially enable the SIGINT data to help them visualize. So if you think about reading a whole bunch of, you know, SIGINT information reports, and you're trying to track in your mind where they're taking place, I mean, what we do is we geospatially enable them, we put them on a map, and you can all of a sudden say, oh, that individual went from point A to point B to point C. I get it. I'm getting that pattern of life, and it's easy to visualize. I mean, that's part of what we do. The same way geospatially enabling the human data and the NASA data and the open source. So if you have all of that data in a cloud, it's much easier for the analyst to access. On the flip side, it's much easier to manage it also. Now, the challenge, and there's a whole bunch of challenges, but one of the challenges, of course, is to make sure all of the data is metadata tagged, that you have to be able to arrange it in such a way that the query will work against it. And we have been doing that for the last couple of years. We've got to make a decision about how far back in time do we go and metadata tag all of that information. And, of course, the other challenge is security. And, you know, we are... And you heard this reference, depending on NSA and CIA, to really create that strong security layer. So maybe that is one good thing about stovepipe databases. You can only get in, if you break one, you get in one, you're only in that one. All the data is in the cloud, and you get into the cloud, you may have access to a lot of information. We think the risk is worth it, because we think we'll be able to build that strong security layer. And in fact, NSA has already done that. He's got 3 pilots out there. We have some of our data in the cloud, not very much at this point. In fact, our data that's out there right now is unclassified, but we're going in that direction.
So, I mean, does that mean new servers have to be built? What is the cloud? I mean, it's new servers somewhere, right?
Is actually a much more efficient use of the service that we have.
Oh, really?
We have time for one more.
Greg Carlson mentioned his challenge of getting much more data down to the warfighter. It seems to be that would be part of the mission of the NGA as well. How are you guys working together on that?
We're working very closely together. So he talked about the 3 joint collaboration cells that have been certified by the DNI.
Right.
They're joint with us. So they are NRO-NGA joint cells. We are working together. And it really does take both of us working together, because they've got the ideas on how to get the data down quicker, you know, from the satellite, how to manipulate it to get it into a form that then our image scientists can work with and then get out to the warfighter more quickly. So our cells are jointly manned. You know, we have both of our R&D organizations in them. And it's a real partnership. It's a real success story. And I think the warfighters would say the same.
Thank you very much, Sam, for spending time with us. If you have any other questions or you think of anything else, please come see me. I'll be in the press room.
Thanks for joining us on another Directions Magazine podcast. If you'd like to comment on this press briefing, write to us at editors@directionsmag.com. Thanks again. And be sure to tell a friend.